Are you still walking along the path to find out what your life's mission is? It may be closer than you think. Welcome to Mission Possible Program with your host, Carol Ann Fernandez. Everyone has a true calling. Join us now and find yours. Now, here is Carol Ann Fernandez.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mission Possible Program. Happy to be with you. I'm your host, Carol Ann Fernandez, and the author of the book, Mission Possible, A Guide to Discovering Your True Calling. My guests today are angel artisans Bill and Shannon Gerrells. In the fall of 2005, Bill Gerrells had a sudden life-altering experience. He was rushed to an emergency room at Community Memorial Hospital in Ventura, California, and was admitted to the intensive care unit for treatment. Within days of entering the hospital, his condition worsened. With his body quickly failing, Bill was placed on a ventilator in a drug-induced coma, which lasted for 3.5 weeks. With no hope of saving him, his doctors requested permission from his wife, Shannon, to end his treatment. She refused. Instead, Shannon told the doctors, "You do not know him like I do. If you do not have faith in him, I will have to have enough for all of you. He will get up and walk out of this hospital. I know that and want you to know that. Do not stop treating him." Miraculously, Bill's condition started to improve within days of that meeting. And true to Shannon's word, Bill walked out of the hospital. Although he surmounted the illnesses that nearly robbed him of his life, he lost most of his life memories as well as his short-term memory, symptoms that continue to this day. In the late summer of 2007, almost 2 years after his illness, Bill's unique mission unexpectedly emerged. With no earlier experience or inclination towards woodworking and no recognized talent for drawing, Bill was suddenly able to create visually stunning angels from rudimentary images drawn on plywood planks. Each one is meticulously created with love and devotion, while Bill forms each angel from a multitude of carved pieces. Shannon paints and adorns each one uniquely. Their angels have found their way to President Barack Obama and the White House, the Pope, and to actress Halle Berry, to name just a few. Living their mission, Bill said, "I want our angels to give hope to those in need and to remind others that nothing is impossible. I am blessed to be able to create these angels and to see the joy they bring to others." Welcome, Bill and Shannon Gerrells.
Oh, thank you very much. That was a very nice lead, and that's a wonderful. You know, every time I hear my own story, it just makes me smile.
And you have quite a story.
Yes, I do.
So thank you for joining me, beautiful souls. And as you know, I first happened upon your angels when I was at the Spiral Staircase, which is a gift shop at the Inn of the Seventh Ray restaurant. And I love, love, love angels. So, of course, when I spotted several of your angels, I immediately fell in love, and I've been collecting them ever since. I think I have about 12 of them in different sizes, and each of them has a theme, the date it was made, a certificate of authenticity, and they are all signed by you, Bill. And Shannon, you're signing them as well, right?
Yes, yes, I am.
Wonderful. So,
you know, when we first started creating them, Shannon wasn't signing them because she felt that she was just painting my creation, my wooden pieces, and she didn't have that feeling that they were hers as well. Since then, she has taken my creations and turned them into these beautiful works of art. So
yes.
Now. We are both signing them because they were made with love from both of us.
Yes, indeed. Well, I believe everyone has a mission, a purpose, a unique contribution to make. And based upon my research, some people arrive at their missions by what I refer to as a life-altering situation. So, Bill, before we talk about your life-altering situation, tell us what life was like before that. You were a techie. You had a very successful established career running call centers in Germany, England, and the U.S. for businesses like AT&T. And you had no inclination for drawing. And tell us a bit about your personality.
Well, From what I've been told, because I have lost most of my memory, but I worked very hard to build a career in the tech business and in running call centers and customer service centers. I was very focused on my work and on my career, and I didn't go to college, so I had to work pretty much extra hard to get, you know, to the level I was, you know, management director. And I worked very, very hard and very long hours. And so running through that life was very, it wasn't mindful. It was just, you'd get up every day, you'd go to work every day, you'd work hard every day, and you'd come home and spend maybe an hour with your family. And that was pretty much it. It was pretty much a solitary life, and it was really centered around earning money and going to work and doing the same thing day after day.
So take us to the fall of 2005, when your life was suddenly and drastically changed.
So Shannon and I had been together for a little while, a couple years, and I've always been kind of stubborn about going to see doctors and, you know, reaching out for help. It just wasn't something that was part of my nature. I think most men are like that. You know, you get sick, you take NyQuil, you go to bed, and supposedly you wake up better the next day. So we got married in September, in a beautiful little ceremony on the beach with our closest friends. Mm. And that was in September, and the day after Thanksgiving, I had been coughing a lot between when we got married. And Shannon kept saying, you know what, you should really go have that looked at with a doctor. I'm like, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. We went to a beautiful Thanksgiving dinner here in a place called the Big Yellow House up in Carpinteria, I believe, Summerlin. And the very next day, one of my lungs collapsed. And that was the beginning of, I like to say, my transformation. Some people would call it a catastrophe, but for me, it was, you know, Shannon always used to say, you know what, Bill, there's bigger things than you and I. And if you don't recognize that, one day the rug's going to be pulled out from underneath you, and you're going to be forced to realize you're not in control of the things you think you are in control of. And I used to be like, you know, Shannon, that doesn't sound exactly right. But sure enough, it was exactly right. So it was
wow,
my transformation.
Shannon.
Going. I know, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's wisdom.
She used to say, you know what, she has always had the belief that we are all part of the same thing. And whatever that same thing is bigger than all of us. And it needs all of us, and we're all important to it. And we learn as we go. But because I would just, you know, I'd smile at her because I love her. So I'd smile at her and say, oh, yeah, I understand. But I didn't understand until I had my transformation.
Mm. So, Shannon, tell us more about that. What occurred for Bill? And where did you find the strength and the unwavering faith to tell the doctors what you told them?
Well, after he collapsed in the bathroom floor after the day after Thanksgiving and said, it feels like someone's stabbing me, we got him to the emergency room, and they said he had pneumonia and that they would inflate his lung and he'd spend his days up there, and after antibiotics, it's a go. But, you know, when I saw the oxygen level when I was sitting by his bed, you know, it was 83. And I remember growing up back in my past, my mom was ill for a lot of her life. So I remember sitting in a hospital room with my mom and seeing that exact same thing. And I'm thinking, no, I think this is a little bigger. And for some reason, I started calling a lot of our family, just letting them know. I just kind of followed my heart on this. And so that evening they moved him up to the ICU. I went to visit him, and he kept complaining about how bad it hurt and how uncomfortable he was. And I'm just sitting there holding his hand, trying to keep him calm and reassure him. And he would look up towards the ceiling where they have the curtain that connects to divide you, give you privacy. And he started laughing, and he started mumbling or talking. And I said his name, and he didn't respond, and I said it again. And he kind of looked dazed, and I said, "Honey, who were you talking to?" And he goes, "I wasn't talking to anyone." And I said, "But you were laughing with someone." He goes, I wasn't laughing with anybody. And I just thought, well, you know, maybe it's the medicine. Maybe he's groggy. Maybe they gave him something for sleep. So the next day, I go in. So the next 3 days, I go in like clockwork, and I start making friends with the nurses. I try to find out as much information as I can. And then I went home. I was exhausted, fell asleep. And I got a phone call, and there was a message where the doctor said that he stopped breathing all on his own and that they had to intubate him. But I wasn't there to have permission, so they did the life-saving measures, and that I needed to come to the hospital as quick as possible. So I'm just not being in that situation. I didn't quite know what to expect. So when I got there, the nurses were really kind, and all of a sudden I expected to say hello to him. And just like you would see in a movie, you see someone laying there, and they have a big, giant, like, oxygen mask attached to their nose and mouth and a tube running down their throat. And there's no response. And I'm just kind of standing there, and the one nurse came up, and she goes, "Okay, let me explain what happened. The doctor gave me all the information. He got double pneumonia and sepsis of the blood and ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, where your lungs congeal and you can no longer move by themselves. And they had to put him in a drug-induced coma." And she goes and says, "He can hear you. He can hear you. But if we turn the medicine down, he's going to get agitated. He's going to want to pull the tube from his throat. And that's why we had to tie his wrist," because I was really upset. And I said, "Okay, well, untie his wrist, because I guarantee you he will not do that with me here." And she said, "Okay." And they had a big jar, like the size of a big peanut butter jar, right by the side of his bed. And it was this brown color. And I said, "What is that?" And she goes, "Well, we have a smaller tube inside the breathing tube that's down into the lungs. So when his body reacts and starts wanting to cough up what is inside the lung, it goes into that tube." And I was just flabbergasted. It looked like gel. It looked like brown, goopy gel. And so she left me. And I thought, okay, if I start to cry and he can hear me, he might get upset, and he may not stay positive like he needs to. So I told him I was there. I told him I loved him. I told him that I would come and stay as long as I could, day and night, and that I would, you know, find out everything I could from the doctor. So during this time, it's Christmas. We have 5-year-old twin boys at the time. And we had just moved into a new home. So I thought, okay, when the nurses are doing their shift changes, I can't be there. So I would decorate the house. I went out and bought the presents. I baked the cookies. I brought the nurses cookies every night. I painted them little angels and brought them to them in a basket.
Oh, I Shannon, that's so sweet.
I thought, the people that are taking care of my husband are the nurses. They're the ones with the heart. They're the ones that are making sure he gets what he needs. So I thought, okay, I need to, you know, everything is still on plan. Christmas is still happening. I everything is going according to plan, because when he wakes up is when we celebrate. And because I thought, I thought, the moment I give in to this, the moment everything shatters. And I think that was the only thing holding my sanity together, was that there was so much outside preoccupation, you know, going on, that it forced me to not just dwell singly on him. I had two boys that I was, you know, sharing custody with my ex. The holidays were here. I had to get in contact with his family. I had to make sure to take care of my little dog. It was a blessing. The timing was a blessing, believe it or not. Hmm. So I would go in, and the nurses were so kind. They let me sneak my dinner in and eat with them. And I would just have these one-sided conversations with them all the time. and I'd turn on the TV to his favorite, you know, TV program. And I asked him, because he did have one single wall that wasn't curtain. And I asked, is it okay if I put pictures of the boys up there and his daughter up there and me? So when he does open his eyes, but when he does look, he'll know that we've been here and that he has something tangible to look at, and that he's not been forgotten. And they were so kind. They let me do it. I bought a little stuffed dog for him to hold in his hand, so he knew that our little dog was with him. And they would let me write the Christmas cards by his bedside. And if I fell asleep, they just said, don't wake her. We'll have our shift change. She's completely asleep. You know, I was staying there till like 4 in the morning. And they would just cover me up with a warm blanket. And I made sure to rub his hands, because his hands would always ache. And so I'd rub him with lotion. And the nurses found out, so they would do it for him when I wasn't there. And they knew how important it was for him to have his face shaved every day. So they made it a point every day.
Wow, Shannon, like, your love and devotion is so amazing. So amazing.
Oh, thank you. So I just figured, you know.
Say this real quick, I'm glad we're not on Skype, because just hearing this story makes me cry.
So I remember it was the third weekend, and I remember we had the boys. They do this thing out in Ventura that's called the Parade of Lights, where they dress up all the boats. And the boys were so, so excited to go. And a friend of ours went with us. And one of our sons is autistic. He's on the high range of it. And he didn't understand why Bill couldn't be with us. And they were really upset why they couldn't see him. Because they kept saying, we promise we'll be good. We'll be good. We won't do anything. And I said, honey, it's to protect you so you don't get sick and you don't get someone else sick. And so their dad was kind enough to keep them for the majority of the time that I needed. And so I remember trying to do things with them, and I remember the boys both looked at me and they said, Mom, can we go home without Dad? It's not fun. And I remember, if I cry, they cry. And so we went home, and I took them back, and I went to the hospital, and the doctor just happened to be there when I came in. So it's 3 weeks in, and he goes, we would like to do a trach. And I'm all, is that where you cut him to the throat? And he goes, yes, because he caught pneumonia again, and he's collecting too many germs. We can take care of him better, so where he is, we can tape off the area better, so that way it'll keep him from getting sick. And I said, I know this probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you, but my husband used to sing for a living way before he met me. And he doesn't sing very often, but when he does, I call him my songbird. And if you cut into his throat, could that possibly change? And he said, it might. He goes, I'm not going to lie to you. he might not be able to sing again. And I said, can we please give it one more week? Please, just one more week. And I said, and he's like, well, he's not getting any better, and he needs to discuss some things with you. So if you come in tomorrow, all five of the doctors will be in. And there was a pulmonologist, cardiologist, a psychiatrist, there was a family practice doctor, there was the doctor on shift. I mean, I couldn't keep track. There were so many. But I knew them by their faces. And so there was a little side room outside the waiting area, outside of the ICU, and it was kind of cramped, and we're all in there, and everyone's kind of giving me their doctor report card, as you would call it. And a lot of it, I'd have to stop them and say, could you please put that in layman's terms? Because I don't speak your language, and I need to understand this as crystal clear as I can. And finally, one of the doctors just put his head down and goes, look, we don't know if he's going to come out of it. He was at an oxygen level for 3 days straight at 83. We don't know if he's sustained brain damage. And we've tried to remove the tube several times, and he cannot breathe on his own, and we can't get his lungs to clear up. And we're running out of options. So now we need you to probably make the most important choice and make arrangements. And I think I was in shock, but I was mad. I was angry, too, at the same time. And I looked up at him, and I was trying hard not to cry, because you know what? I'm sure that these doctors see it every day. And I looked at him, and I said, who's going to take care of his daughter? Who's going to take care of his sons? Who's going to take care of me? I said, tomorrow you're going to go to the next patient, and he's not going to be a thought in your head. I'm not going to be a thought in your head. I said, this is a life-altering change for hundreds of people. And you're telling me to put my faith in you, someone I don't know, but I'm sure you're a good man and you're a good doctor. But you don't know him like I know him. I said, he's stubborn and he's going to walk out of this hospital.
Hmm.
And you have to trust me on that. And they just said, well, we'll give it one more week. And I remember there was one female doctor in there. Her name was Dr. Chavez. She was so, so kind. And she gripped my hand and she goes, it's going to be okay. And I walked out of the room and I just got a breath of fresh air. I was just trying to calm down. And this nurse comes by and says, Shannon, she knew my name, but I didn't know her. And she goes, I need you to go to the third floor and go to patient advocate office. And she goes, I can't talk very long. And her tag said Irene. And she was a charge nurse. And she goes, please promise me you won't know my name. You won't say it came from me. This is information that you have to speak out on your own. But I think that he has a fighting chance, too. So I thank your doctor. Went down to the third floor.
So that's a miracle. Shannon, we're going to take a quick short break, and when we come back, we'll hear the rest of your story. You are listening to the Mission Possible program on voiceamerica.com, the Empowerment Channel. I'm your host, Carol Ann Fernandez, in conversation with Bill Gerrels and his wife, Shannon, about how their mission as angel artisans unfolded.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you tired of your job? Do you feel like you were meant for more? Would you like to live life on your terms? You can when you actualize your true calling. You can be financially sustainable. You can live a meaningful life. You can love what you do. Even make a difference and leave a luminous legacy.
Drawing from over a decade's worth of research, her immense wisdom, and cross-cultural life experience, Carol Ann guides, encourages, and inspires individuals to awaken to their purpose and actualize their life's mission. For those seeking to deepen their understanding and learn more, please visit carolann.global. For information about programs, coaching, and local workshops, or to purchase her book, Mission Possible, A Guide to Discovering Your True Calling, or to invite Carol Ann to speak at your event, please visit carolann.global. Again, that's carolann.global.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
We're with you wherever Alexa and Google are. At home, in the car, on your smart TV, and your connected devices.
Hey, Alexa.
Hey, Google. Play my favorite Voice America podcast on TuneIn.
It's just that easy. But don't forget to make sure you actually mention the name of the podcast show to make it work.
You are listening to Mission Possible Program. To reach Carol Ann Fernandez or her guest on today's program, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. If you'd like to send an email, the email address is radiomissionpossible@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Mission Possible program. I'm your host, Carol Ann Fernandez, in conversation with Bill Gerald and his wife, Shannon, whose mission is to fashion beautiful, unique, handmade wooden angels. So, Shannon, you were telling us about the nurse, the angel that showed up.
Yes. So I ran down to the third floor, the patient advocate office. I explained my situation. And by that evening, there was no more talk by doctors of pulling him off of anything, that the insurance is paying for it, everything is covered, and we will remain like we are. So that was a good thing. I think after that happened, it was a breath of fresh air, but it also released something in me that I'm sure millions of people go through in a situation like this. I finally went home. I was exhausted. I saw my little dog, and I held her, and I started to cry. And then I got up, and I got really angry. And I just said out loud, God, are you mad at me? I said, I knew from the time I was a little girl I'd have true love my whole life. And I have it. But did I do something wrong? Because I didn't think true love involved watching the person you love die. I started to scream, and I said, it's not fair. It's not right. I'm a good person. I've made mistakes, but I'm not a bad person. And I remember falling asleep on the floor after just yelling and screaming. And I woke up to a phone call. At first, I thought I was dreaming. And this woman on the other end said, Shannon, your husband's awake. He wants to see you. And I thought, wow. Did I go crazy? Am I in a weird dream? And she goes, Shannon, wake up. I know, wake up. Come to the hospital. Just come. And so I threw on whatever I could. I ran literally, it was a mile from our place. Went to the hospital, ran up the stairs, didn't wait for the elevator. And just as I saw him being put back into ICU, they had removed the tube. But he thought he couldn't talk. So he had his hand over his throat, and he's smiling at me. Hmm. And that's where it comes in to play, where for a couple of days, I didn't know that he didn't know me. He just thought I was some nice person visiting him in the hospital. He had no idea what I was saying. And so the psychiatrist came in and started talking to him. So
he used to come in every day. The psychiatrist would say, "So do you know who you are?" And I'd be like, "Mary." He's like, "No." And do you know where you live? And I'd be like, "Florida." And he's like, "No, you're Bill, and you live in Ventura." And he would do it every day.
like three or four times a day. And then finally one day he came in a bad mood and he's like, do you know anything at all? And I said, I know her because I married her, but I don't know her name.
Oh.
And that was my connect back to life. So all that, you know, all the, like, as I look back and you try to make sense of what your life has, why you're where you're at now, I really believe that all of it, the illness, the memory, all of that was guided for me to get away from the life that really was just a self-centered, life, self-important life. And it took all that away. It took all the memories that many of us wish we could forget as we grow up, but it took all that from me. So when I told Shannon that I was going to make angels, she told me, you know, Bill, you forgot so much of your life, but you don't have any talent. And I said, you know what?
I said it with love.
I said, I don't know what I can't do, so I can do anything.
Wow.
And she looked at me and said, you can do anything. Because truly I didn't know anything. I only knew her. It took a long time for me to remember. I have a daughter. I have stepsons. I have brothers. I have a big family, and I didn't remember any of them except her. And I didn't know what I did for a living before because my memory was literally wiped clean. And I remember saying those words. If you don't know you can't do something, you can do anything. Mm. And that's how that was the beginning of the angels for us.
So you inform your wife, your lovely wife, and your kids that you're going to make angels. And they're wondering where that's coming from. Tell us the story about the neighbor who just happened to give you a scroll, or happened to have a scroll saw.
So let me back up a little bit. So because I couldn't work anymore, I couldn't really do anything. I was kind of like walking around in a wonder world. And Shannon said, okay, if you could do one thing for me every night, make sure the boys are asleep in their room because they're afraid of the dark. And I went in one night to check the boys, and there was an angel holding my son. So I woke Shannon up and said, hey, there's an angel in the boys' room. She's like, honey, there's not an angel in there. The doctor said you'd hallucinate. I'm like, I'm telling you what I saw. Let's go look at her again. And we went in, and there was no angel. But in the morning, I said, you know what, honey? I'm going to make angels. And she very lovingly and very, probably after all she's gone through, pretty much to the point, honey, you have no talent. That very day, a friend came by my house and said, hey, Bill, I was cleaning out my garage, my basement, and would you like this scroll saw? And I'm like, heck yeah. And Shannon's like, please don't give him that because he has no aptitude for tools. What are you even going to do with it? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I want it. And you can tell how much she loves me. She's like, okay, well, okay, but probably I'll have to supervise you. I'm like, well, okay, well, I don't even know what that meant, but I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. So she gave me the scroll saw.
And, Bill, you didn't even know what a scroll saw was. You didn't know how to use a scroll
No.
saw. You know nothing about it, but you just knew you had to say yes
No.
to this.
I had to
Yeah, we had
yes.
to. I looked and, it up online.
Yeah, she said, you know what you can do with that? You can cut things. I'm like, oh, that'd be really cool. So I found a piece of wood, and I started cutting out pieces of wood and loading them into a trash bag, this big white bag. I remember the bag because I kept it for the longest time. But I kept putting pieces in it, and she's like, what are you making? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just cutting out pieces of wood because it's fun. And I kept cutting them out. And she said, well, let's see what you have in that bag. This was days later, and we emptied the bag out, and we started – she said, it's kind of like a little puzzle. So we started kind of, you know, placing them around it, you know, to make little patterns and everything. And it suddenly turned into, we were looking at an angel. We were looking at this beautiful winged angel. And it was, from the time I left the hospital, I was never really clear on anything. But when I saw that laid out on the floor, it was so clear that I had been given this angel. This is my angel. Like, it was so weird that all these individual pieces, it's probably over 100 pieces, as we moved them around, it just came into focus that it was an angel. And that was my very first angel.
And she's beautiful. She's large. She's not a tiny thing. She's quite large and very beautiful.
She's 3 foot tall.
Wow. So you kept creating other angels after her, and how did it evolve into, how did you start to sell them? So it evolved from a hobby to selling them.
Well, when I kept making, like, after, it took about 3 weeks to do her, because I just didn't know what I was doing. But it turns out, because I had no preconceived notion of how to do anything, it just organically happened that I finished her and created her, and I would look at her, and it would just, like, it brings such joy, like almost, you know, like tearful joy. Like, it was so amazing that this came from me, because it's the farthest thing from what I was. So every day I would wake up early, and I would just go out and I'd use that song. I'd cut out pieces, and Shannon would be like, "So what are you making today?" Because I guess we didn't realize it was going to be angel after angel after angel. And I said, "I don't know what I'm making today," but every day it would come out an angel. Every day the pieces would somehow just transform into that, into another different type of angel. And at first, for probably how long, Shannon, maybe a year and a half, none of them looked even similar. Like, they were just...
No.
I don't know.
They didn't. They didn't look similar. You could, in the wood grain, it was so beautiful because the way the light would show on it, you could see the eyes and the lips and the nose, the silhouette. And you just stare at it, kind of like, you know, when you stare at a lake and the way the light shimmers on it, and it changes the reflection and the color, and it's kind of what we saw when we looked at it. And I remember...
So after I made about a... go ahead, Jim.
No, I was going to say, after about making, I don't know, you made a bunch of them, and I come home from work one day, and I'm like, what are you going to do with all these? And he goes, "I don't know, but I'm just so happy when I make them. I'm not crying. I'm not sad. I feel like I'm contributing. I don't feel like I'm worthless because I can't do anything else." And so we decided to go up to Ojai, California, and see if maybe one of the galleries would like to display them. I mean, I had no idea what to do. And so we packed up what we had, and I drove us up there, and there were a couple that were closed, but there was one that was open. So we went in, and the guy seemed real nice at first, and he was talking to us about Bill's story, and then he goes, "Bill, what's your medium?" And before I could explain to Bill what a medium was, he got real excited, and he goes, "Oh, no, I think you misunderstand." He goes, "I'm an extra large." And my mouth dropped. I kind of wanted to laugh. I was kind of like, I hope this guy's got a good sense of humor. And he looked at Bill and he goes, "I don't have time for this." And he walked away. And Bill's like, "What? I don't understand. What did I do?" And he started to get teary-eyed. And we packed up our stuff, went to the car. And I said, "It's okay, honey." I said, "You know what?" I said, "Maybe that guy was acting that way because maybe it's not supposed to be with him. He wouldn't appreciate what it is." And so we're driving back down from Ojai on the 33, getting back to the 101, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning. I said, "The angel store, we need to go to the Angel Store on Main Street, things from heaven. And he goes, I don't know that place. And I said, I do. I said, you never used to go in. But I said, I went in. I said, I'm friends with him. I said, trust me. I said, we'll go and take him in. So we took them all in, and I saw Keith and Francesca, and I hugged them, and I explained to them, and Bill told the story, and they were like, we love them, and we will sell them. And they've been a part of our family ever since.
That's amazing. And Bill, you go through a lot of time and care and love. You both do. And where does the inspiration come from? Like, I have an angel and she's holding a butterfly and it's called transformation. I have another angel holding the world. She's called peace. Where does that come from for you?
So there's a few things that happen. There's a few things that happen in my mind pretty much constantly. I feel like I'm being downloaded information. Like, I didn't understand what transformation was. I speak about it now, my transformation, you know, the illness, and it transformed me. But at the time, I had no idea what that meant. But I saw butterflies as something, like, I couldn't tell where a butterfly came from. And Shannon explained that they were in these little cocoons. And I'm like, I don't get it. And she's like, they start off as little caterpillars, and they come into another life form. And I'm like, well, I'm going to make an angel that has a butterfly, and I'm going to call it transformation. And she's like, well, that kind of makes sense. And when I did it, it just felt right. It felt like I knew something important, that people go through transformations. So each of my angels, I have one that holds a heart, and I have,
how many different
types do I make, Shannon?
I would say over
I think I make close to,
I scan them in.
Probably 150.
A lot of them people.
Different.
Yeah, I scan them in, the computer. And a lot of them are people come to us and they've experienced something in their life and they say, do you think you can create this for me? And a lot of times that's how something new starts. And then it just grows from there.
And you know, that goes back to what I was saying earlier, because people would say, Bill, can you make this and make that? And I would say, I'm not sure. And then Shannon would pull me aside and say, do you remember once when you told me, I don't know what I can't do, so I can do everything? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, you can do anything. Don't let yourself be restricted by what you think you can't do. You can do anything you want to do.
Shannon, that's so amazing. Bill, what an amazing partner. How beautiful.
I know. She's the best.
Yes, she is. And I want you guys to share some of the stories that you've heard, you know, from people who have your angels. You've got some amazing stories to tell, and just the inspiration, joy, healing that have come to people.
So there was this woman that we met, and I thought she was maybe in her early 50s. Turns out she was in her 80s. And she came to me and she said, I would like to buy one of your little palm angels. And I'm like, oh, lovely. Well, you know, is there anything special? She said, no, just make it from your heart, because I have stage 4 cancer and I think it's going to help me. And it was so odd to see this person so full of life telling me that story. And I'm like, of course. So I made her this beautiful little palm angel, and Shannon painted it. It had a little heart on it, and it was just beautiful. And we took it to her. Her name was Barbara. She lives here in Ventura. And she's like, oh, thank you so much. So I was so moved by her. I would check in with her like every month. I would send her an email, or I'd call her like, how are you feeling? And she said, you know, this is about 3 months in. She said, I just got a checkup from my doctor, and he said that my tumor has shrunk by 40%, but they haven't done any treatments. And I said, well, what's going on? Did they misdiagnose you? She said, no. When I hold your angel in my right hand,
I can feel the warmth go up my arm and into my chest, and I can feel the healing. She said, I've carried that angel in my hand or in my pocket from the second you gave it to me. It's never away from me. She had stage 4 cancer when we met her. About 3.5 years later, I was still in contact with her, and she said, I feel vibrant. I feel healthy. She said, and it's that angel. She said, when it's away from, like when I put it on the table and I'm not touching it, I feel different. I have to hold it. It is a part of me. And it was such an amazing story. Like it was, so we drove over and saw her years later, and she was just still as healthy and vibrant. And she held my hand and she said, I know that you created this. But you created this through something above you. So can you just take a moment every day before you start to make your angels to realize that you are a messenger for people who need a message? And I never forgot that, because every day I start my day with a prayer, and I ask God to keep my mind clear, keep my hands safe, and to give me what I need to create these, and give the angel what it needs to take to the person who needs it.
And Bill and Shannon, both of you, what I love about you is you hold each one in such a loving way. You kiss each angel. And tell us why the angels don't necessarily have features. A few of them do if someone requests that, but tell us about that.
Shannon, would you like to explain that one?
Yeah, I do, because when we started making them, and I said, if you make them with faces, people are going to probably try to identify it with them or someone they know, and if that face doesn't look like that person, they might not be able to relate. So with the wood grain on the face, try to make some without faces, because when they look at it, it'll be easier for them to envision who they want to give it to, or who it represents to them, or if it represents themselves. And
so it becomes very personal.
Yeah. And I kiss them. I know it sounds kind of, it probably sounds silly, but here's the thing. As we get bogged down in everyday life, we forget things around us. But the wood that we get came from a living tree. A tree that feels and communicates with its leaves and needs air and sunshine and everything, just like we do.
Yes.
And just because it's something that's different and doesn't look like us doesn't mean it doesn't feel. And so it gave up something to be a part of what we're doing. And I want to honor what that tree represents and what it's turned into. And when I touch it and Bill touches it, we're putting our essence into it, and it truly feels like a living creation, a living piece. And I think we forget in life that in order to get something, something has to give up something. And it's a give and a take. It just can't be a take. So I try to honor everything. I mean, when I walk my dog, I know it sounds silly, I pet the leaves, and I talk to my plants, and I just, everything, every life force is still a life. And,
yes.
You know, that's why it's so important to me when you hear the beautiful stories of the Native American people, when they talk about, it wasn't to kill things, to kill them. It was to help us. And we gave back, and we only took what we needed, and we thanked whatever it was we used for giving up so we could have.
Yes, and there was such an honoring there. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the honor and the acceptance in our part of it, too. You know, for me, even now,
as a grown man, because my memory is so short, everything fascinates me. Seeing birds fly, like, everything fascinates me. Like, I look at it through the eyes of a child, which for me, I'm sure some people think, you know, you've always been kind of childish, but truly, when I look at the world around me, it, like, everything is a little miracle. I saw a hummingbird the other day, and it flew at me and just stopped right in front of my face, and it was, well, I couldn't stop smiling, like, just the smallest things, you know, and I think Shannon's right that we kind of forget because, you know, everyone has finance problems, everyone has health problems and family problems and just all the things that go along with, you know, making sure your kids are healthy and keeping your health in line. And you forget that the wonders that are right outside our door, these wonderful creations came from somewhere, and we're part of that. We're all here together. We're all interconnected. That life is life, and it's a sharing, no matter what that life is.
Yes, indeed. And I love, Bill, that you look at the world with the awe and wonder like a child. It's truly beautiful. And as adults, we forget that, and you're reminding us of that. And it's truly beautiful.
Thank you.
And share with us one more story that you have, because I know you have so many stories of what people have shared with you.
So Shannon and I, here in Ventura, they have a 4th of July fair, and Shannon and I used to go down to the Angel Store when it was open during the fair, and she would take the angels that I created, and she would paint them in the Angel Store, and we would just sit and talk to people about, you know, their life, and everyone has something to share. And this little lady came in, and she was real small, and she was older, and she was just mad. And she comes up to me, and she poked me hard in the chest, and she said, you make angels. I'm like, yes, I do. She said, I bought one of your angels because I have a problem in my chest, and guess what? My chest still hurts. And I'm like, well, they don't really come with a guarantee that you're going to be healthy. I was trying to make her laugh, but that wasn't working too well. And she said, well, that's not why I'm here. I'm here to tell you that I live alone and I need help because I don't feel well. And my son is homeless. He won't live with me, and he sleeps in the park, and he does drugs, and he's a drunk. But every month he comes because he knows I get Social Security, and he asks me for money. And because he's my son, I help him. And I'm like, you know what? I'm a father. I understand that. She said, well, he came to borrow money, and I showed him the angel I bought from you. And he looked at it, and he held it, and he's like, you know, this is a really nice angel, Mom. I hope it makes you feel better, but I really have to go. And he left. And, you know, I didn't know when I was going to see him again. But he called me not too long after that and said, Mom, when I was at your house, the angel spoke to me. And he, pardon me, he checked himself into a rehab. He made it through the program, and he moved in with her to help her. And he said it was because the angel told him that his life needed to be that and not what it was. And she came down to thank me and to tell me that the work I do changes people's lives.
That it does. And on that note, Bill, we've come to the end of the program. So thank you both for joining me. And if people want to learn more about you, they can go to angelstarduststudios.com.
It's angelduststudios.com.
Yeah, so thank you for joining me today. I so appreciate you guys being here. And that wraps up this hour.
Thank you for allowing us to share our story.
Certainly, you're most welcome. So everyone else, keep gathering the clues to your mission possible. This week, reflect on the following. Have you had a life-altering experience? Is there something that is trying to emerge through you because of it? I'm your host, Caroline Fernandez. I leave you with this quote by Panache Desai. Your presence upon the earth is required, and all that you need to fulfill your greater purpose will be delivered to you. Everything is conspiring to help you flourish and flower into your grandest self. This has been the Mission Possible program. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Mission Possible program. Please join your host, Carol Ann Fernandez, for another edition of the program next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Until the next show, we wish you the best week ahead.